Welcome back to the Black Is / Sickly Cat podcast. Coming into this political season, we're going to be tackling a couple political podcasts up until the election to kind of discuss some of the things that are piquing interest in the political sphere. Today, we have actually two black conservative men to represent the Fox News talking points. We have Josh Wood.
Starting already.
And John Wood and Josh Stroud. Josh Stroud is Skyping in from Eugene, Oregon, representing the only black conservative in Eugene, Oregon. John Wood is representing
the state of Oregon.
Yeah, pretty much the whole state of Oregon. Yeah. We have John Wood. Say hi, John.
How's it going?
John and I have we've bumped heads before, but
we have a healthy banter and a competitive, but I think a friendly rapport.
Yes,
we sharpen each other with our differences. I'd like to think so.
Yes, yeah. But we found that we've actually had some similarities.
Yeah,
we've agreed on a few points, one or two.
Yeah, we've sort of randomly bumped into each other on the same points, and I think we're both very uncomfortable with agreeing with each other and try to retreat to our differences as soon as possible.
Exactly, that's where we're most comfortable. Sitting to his left, we have Chris Lehman.
What's going on, y'all?
Chris Lehman and Ken Lehman are the principals at Black Is, and they will be representing the black perspective.
Yeah, I'll just be representing myself.
All right.
As deep as y'all brothers, but I'm aware.
And Wayne Bird, we have
He's
my
selling
brother.
Himself short, people.
Yes. Wait until you see him get excited. He turns into a different man. And we have Wayne Bird.
Hello.
Wayne Bird is, he was at one point a very zealous supporter of Obama, and now has changed his position a little bit, which is why we brought him in on this podcast, because we are going to be discussing whether Obama has earned a second term as president. And I'm noticing right now there's a lot of dissent within the Democratic Party from Obama. Most of the reasons that I see this dissent is pretty asinine. And I know there's a lot of reasons to criticize Obama, you know, and I'm a supporter as well, but I feel he fell short in several different ways. But most of the hate that I see targeted at Obama right now is because of his stance on gay marriage, abortion. I think a lot of that doesn't carry. I know there's going to be a lot of hate on what Obama has done with the healthcare, but I think if you look at kind of what Bill Clinton was saying in his address at the National Convention, we can't necessarily criticize Obama for the shortcomings in the healthcare reform bill when his initial bill looked so drastically different than what was passed. And the reason for a lot of those changes pretty much lay in the hands of the GOP and their strong lobbying and the lobbying of Wall Street. And Obama just didn't really stick to his guns and, you know, push for the public option or push for single payer. And I think because of that, now he's being criticized for a lot of, you know, the mandated healthcare, you know, and this isn't what he proposed from the jump. So if we're going to criticize him, let's really go off of what he was initially trying to push. And if we have issues with that, then let's address those issues, is my position. What do you think about that?
Well, obviously the sort of right-wing and left-wing criticisms of Obama are going to be a bit different. I don't see how you can blame the Republicans for the shortcomings in the healthcare bill when no Republicans voted for the bill. It was passed entirely on the strength of Democrats. I mean, not a single Republican from the House or the Senate went along with it. I mean, there was a time during the negotiations where they tried to mollify the bill to get it to appeal to some Republicans, but ultimately the fight was within the Democratic Party as to whether or not it was going to be this or that. So personally, I mean, I think that the health care bill, I think the Affordable Care Act does some good things. Obviously, you know, it's a good thing that people can get coverage who had pre-existing conditions and previously were not eligible. But I think that people sometimes fail to see the broader costs of this, especially now that the And John, I don't know if we should get too deep into the numbers and the weeds and whatnot, but now that the Medicaid mandate portion of it has been struck down by the Supreme Court. There are all sorts of problems with the way you're going to fund this gigantic healthcare thing. So at this point, what I see happening is that premiums are just going to keep going up, and you may expand coverage a little bit, but there's so many loopholes through which you can opt out and you can keep from buying in, or you can pay a small penalty that won't be enough to help cover the broader cost of the system. To me, this looks like a big, expensive mess, and so I think that there's some merit in some of the conservative criticisms of it, but of course, being a Republican, I guess that's my predictable position.
Yes, it is.
Ha, ha, ha. I second.
What was that, Josh?
Just what he said. I second his notion. I don't think it needs to. I don't think there's anything more that needs to be said about that. In addition to the fact that it's supposed to, or it wasn't. I think it initially was sought after as a tax, and Obama quickly said, no, it's not a tax. And sure enough, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of it being a tax.
A tax.
Right, but I think that's it's kind of inconsequential. That I mean, in the fact, well, whether it's a tax or not, I kind of want to...
If it was inconsequential, then why did Obama see fit to say that it was not a tax?
Well, because Obama was trying to say that he did not break his pledge to raise taxes on the bottom 95% of Americans. Right. And so he said, hey, this isn't a tax. But then when they
and
went to argue...
And because of Grover's pledge increase... And if you say it's going to be a tax,
Obama didn't sign Grover's pledge, though. This was just the
pledge. I'm saying that he knows that he needs their support.
Well, Obama didn't need their support to pass the bill. He's not looking for Grover Norquist's
support. If that
support.
Was the case,
obviously,
his initial bill would have been passed.
No, because again, this was an issue within the Democratic Party. You know, because remember, John, they had a supermajority going in to Obama's first term. So there was a somewhat significant minority of Democrats who voted against it. So, I mean, just on the question of why did he call it a tax,
those
it's because
swing states.
Okay, but the point is, why did Obama say it was not a tax? It's because he promised not to raise taxes on 95% of Americans, and the Supreme Court made a liar of him. But when Obama went to court to argue it, his solicitor general argued it partially by saying, no, this is constitutional, not because it's a mandate, but because it's a tax. So, you know, Obama, like many politicians, I'm not just putting this early on Obama. You know, he's running against Mitt Romney, so you can't get too self-righteous about it. But Obama does like to have it both ways sometimes, and this is a perfect example of it.
What are your thoughts, Wayne?
Well, I'm going to have to be somewhat of a spectator on this type of conversation because we're talking about the inner workings of our political system. And part of my reasons for being less than excited about giving him an applause with my vote, which I won't do, is because I've taken a much more macro look at what's happening here. And in order to even make sense of my position, I mean, you started off the discussion talking about people within the Democratic Party expressing some dissent or hate, and neither of those would really be accurate for describing where I sit. So let me kind of step back a page here to explain how I come to this conversation. You know, my parents, when I was very young, and first asking questions about who they were voting for and why, they kind of laid out this framework for the lesser of two evils, you know, and all black families talk about this nonsense, like the lesser of two evils. You got to vote for one of these clowns because he's the less evil of the two, participants. And, you know, I kind of took that moving forward until I started voting, and I thought I had to deal in that realm of choosing someone that was the least negative from my perspective, the one that would do the least harm to the people who I looked at as those like myself.
Not a very inspiring situation.
Not at all. But what changed in the last election was that I thought that we finally had someone who wasn't even part of that spectrum of the lesser of two evils. I thought this person was on the side of good, quote unquote. I thought this was a person who had seen America from its underbelly, a person whose sensibilities were aligned with the masses of people, not the elites. And therefore, I thought him to be a good possibility, not the lesser of two evils. And because of that perspective, I phone banked. I did all that nonsense. I bought shirts and, you know, I did all that stuff. Right? I was a supporter, full in. And because I bought into him being someone who could be concerned with the masses and not the elites. It made me more astute. I watched more carefully. And what I found was that the president of the United States is nothing more than a spokesperson for the elite interests that finance his campaign. No matter who occupies that position, or to use a film reference, no matter who's cast in the role, that person is reading a script of those who financed his ascension to that particular position. So from that perspective, I was more disappointed than normal, because I expected this person to have the interests of the masses. And what I've seen is that those aren't his interests at all. He's a spokesperson for the elite. If he were here, being honest, he would say the same.
Why do you feel that he has taken – do you feel that his stances in respect to conservative stances are more sympathetic to those who are of lower income, or those – or the majority of this country?
I think that politicians will say anything to get votes, because that's what they're promising their financiers. Give me $1 billion – and I'll convince these people that I'm like them. That's our strategy. I'll convince them I'm one of them, and that'll get me more votes than the other guy. So then I'll be your boy when we get in there, and we'll make laws and stuff that kind of benefit you. I think you want to measure the man. You know, that book he wrote, The Audacity of Hope. What could you say about his first 4 years of presidency that was audacious? What move did he make? What thing did he do?
And you don't think the initial plan for the public option ultimately would have seriously harmed the health care industry and insurance agencies. Ultimately, the public option would have put them all out of business.
Your question is,
you see what I mean? So if he had been successful, do you think he had no intention on being successful?
I think he had the intention to do the work of the people that financed him. And I'll explain why I say that. If the person was concerned with the health of a nation, right? You see Michelle Obama talking about health and talking about, I mean, she has her gardens going, and she's concerned with obesity. You know, there are some very key players in what has created the epidemic of obesity and diabetes and cancer in America. Very key players. And those key players are very identifiable to people who study this stuff. One of them, Monsanto.
Right.
Huge, most, I mean, if I thought the devil were real, I would think he was the head of the board of Monsanto. I mean, they're one of the worst, most pernicious corporations in the country that has ever existed, I'd argue. They have the intent of harming people for gain, for financial gain, and harming their health specifically. Now
explain who that is.
Monsanto is an organization that basically has, they started off making DDT, right? They started making chemicals of warfare. And they realized after war was over, we have to do something else with these chemicals. So they kind of altered one a little bit, and they started making pesticides. So they're the owners of Roundup Ready, you know, pesticides and stuff,
which is actually found in their competitors, which is, I think, unreal that they're selling products to their competitors.
Monsanto, for I just give you one example. Monsanto has decided to patent life itself. So their mission is to own all seeds, own the right to all seeds. So if anyone grows anything in the world, they must pay them in order to grow that food, right?
Right.
They have gone as far as to genetically modify strains of seeds to make, for example, they put in a Terminator gene in corn so that farmers that buy their seeds can't, the seed reproduce. Won't produce seed anymore. You have to go back to Monsanto to go ahead and get more seeds. I could go on for a decade about what's wrong with Monsanto. Here's why I bring them up. If he's concerned with anyone's health, he'd have a hard position against this particular corporation. He would make sure they didn't have any control of anything at all. But instead of that, here's what Obama did relative to Monsanto. He appointed the director of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, Roger Beachy, who was a former director of Monsanto, deputy commissioner of the FDA, Michael Taylor. Obama put him in his position. He was a former vice president of Monsanto. Commissioner of the USDA, Tom Vilsack, former Monsanto exec. I mean, I can go on. There's 10 different people Obama appointed to high-ranking positions that are members of Monsanto's previous executive teams. So there's only one reason to do that, especially when you're well aware that this particular corporation has harmed more people than anybody can imagine.
Wayne, not to interrupt or backtrack too much, but do you agree that DDT should be banned? or should have been banned?
I don't have a position on the use of DD or on banning of that particular substance.
Right, right. Because now this is I'm not going to pretend that this is my issue. You're probably more educated on this than I am. But did Monsanto pioneer the use of DDT?
Yes.
From what I understand, DDT has been increasingly, if not altogether, banned since what, the 70s.
DDT is no longer the issue.
Right. DDT is no longer the issue. I think of it though because when they initially came out with DDT. It was something that actually saved quite a few lives over in Africa because it was a very effective pesticide. And as you know, malaria is one of the most prominent killers of people all across the continent. And so when they initially came out with DDT, malaria deaths started to drop precipitously, if I recall correctly. Then after that, in the United States of America, somebody wrote a book, I forget who it was exactly, claiming that DDT had all these negative health consequences. Now, again, I'm not a chemist, don't know too much about the particulars of it, but the political uproar that started in the United States over this caused the usage of DDT to be banned in Africa. And as a consequence of that, malaria deaths started to rise again precipitously, you know? So I'm just throwing out there because you're talking about DDT as specifically a bad thing. I'm not sure if there's a complete consensus about that.
Let me be clear. DDT was one of their first products. Right. Now, most of their damage that they're doing to the world now has nothing to do with DDT. Okay. It has to do with their environmental policies and their policies of attempting to own all food production across the planet.
Right.
I mean, the spike.
Like their GMOs, the genetically modified food.
Right. I mean, their policies in India has caused a dramatic increase in suicides of farmers because they're unable to produce food for their families and their communities because of Monsanto specifically.
Can I just address sort of the thrust of what you're saying? And I feel like I sort of sympathize with where you're coming from without entirely agreeing with the extent to which. You're rooted in this position. I mean, I do believe that corporations and elite financiers, as I think you put it, have too much power and really more specifically too much hidden power in our democracy. And I think that Citizens United was a very bad thing for democracy because it allowed highly moneyed interests to exert that influence with even less accountability. Having said that, I gotta defend Obama now. Thanks, guys.
Which is why the fact that you're even looking to defend him from your perspective is why a lot of the zealous Obama supporters have pulled back from him.
Well, I understand, but you know, I believe that Barack Obama and really just and most politicians, I wouldn't say all, but I think most people who go into public service want to do good. I think they get into it with altruistic reasons. But democracy is complicated, and to a certain extent, you do need money to be able to function. And so, yeah, that does put you into the interests of people who have the funds to finance you. Now, having said that, Barack Obama got most of his funding from small donors during his first campaign. Well, from what I understand, it's true. Most sources have reported that as being the case. And I was, by the way, I was one of them. I don't know if you guys know this. I voted for Obama in 2008. I did exactly what you did, Wayne. I knocked on doors and called people and all of that. My disappointments may be a little bit different, but I do not believe that he is completely bought and owned. I think that certainly he has to work with people. And you know, there's constant compromises that take place with that, and I think that counts for Democrats and Republicans alike. But ultimately, I do believe that even though it's not as absolute a fact as I would like it to be, I still believe that the masses of the American people, the broader American public, are still the most powerful, quote-unquote, interest group that there is, and that people always have the power to change their government if they're willing to see through the media manipulation and all the other things that keep us from working together. And I think that politicians like you and I are human beings who are susceptible to some of the same temptations, but also given to some of the same desires for hope and progress that we are. So I'm just saying I don't have quite that cynical view of it, but I guess I can understand why you might.
I have a quick question. How long has this information about Monsanto been public? How long have we known about this information?
For as long as their existence.
So it's been available.
Oh, absolutely.
But people just haven't been knowledgeable of it.
Well, I mean, I could give you a couple of films to watch that would kind of cover much of it in a succinct fashion.
Okay, because I've seen tons of the documentaries about the food. You know, it's more propaganda for people who are vegan and who just, you know, are anti-meat. but I have a question for you, Wayne. Are you saying all of this to say that you are choosing not to vote this year?
Well, I see voting for either of these two parties as kind of a farce. I recognize that they are all, both sides are financed by similar interests.
Right.
So I don't think any particular person that occupies those positions actually has a personal say in what's going to happen. I think they just respond to the people who finance them. I've heard people say over and over that political campaigns are businesses. And in my experience, when somebody finances your businesses, they have a huge say in what happens in the direction of that business. So, you know, I assumed Obama's posture on war would be different than his predecessor. Was it? No. I mean, he hasn't stopped anything. I mean, his pulling out of Iraq was predetermined by Bush. That was the agreement Bush had for the timetable to get out of Iraq. He just followed it. So I was saying that I had a presumption when I was phone banking for Obama that his position would be different than his predecessor, especially because they were in different parties. And if you really were to take a real look at it, it's anything other than social commentary, the parties take the same line. Whether it's environmental concerns, same. War, same. Acquisition of foreign resources, same. Wealth inequality, same. There's no difference. Neither of them are concerned in any fashion. And when I realized somebody has to raise $1 billion to take that seat, you know, really? Is he going to take my call or take care about my particular desires and wants? No. He's an operative for the elite.
You know, I can't even.
And this is a new realization for you.
You know, it was more, you know, I used to think that those personalities, something about the presidency was about the personalities that were there. Mm-hmm. And that was a naivete on my part. You know, and I don't know, it came from a looking at the world through the lens of most of the problems being, like, for example, you know, I always thought of like racial problems as primary. So I thought, okay, which one of these people is more in tune with what's going on with, you know, my culture or my people, who's more friendly to my people. And I thought that mattered. So I looked at that type of thing. But with this race, I mean, with this particular president, I saw him do things that a person of clear conscience who has seen America from his underbelly could not do. A person of his intelligence who is acting out of his own volition would not be able to make the decisions he's making about appointing key positions to Monsanto execs. He couldn't do it because I don't look him in the eye and see, okay, he's just dumb. Like our last president, yeah, he was an idiot being led by whoever was leading him. But this guy's not. So for him to make these decisions, I know they're not his decisions to make. He's got a script. He's going to read it. And I don't owe him anything anymore. I don't feel as though I should applaud that. He's just a person keeping his job. And you made the statement a moment ago that you believe that politicians get into this game with good intentions. I don't believe that. I think that people like, especially Obama, he would have said it himself, that he's extraordinarily ambitious. So his desire to keep this position for another term was not, I don't believe it
Do you think that person, just because a person is ambitious, doesn't mean that a person has a moral center?
Not at all. I think ambition itself is neither good or bad.
Right.
But it can be used. So I think, when I look at him...
Of course, but I'm saying Obama calling himself ambitious isn't an admission
I don't
of
think,
moral guilt.
What I'm saying is I don't see any evidence that the desire to have a second term comes from his want to do something for the masses instead of the elite.
I think that it does.
I'm willing to give him a chance, though, because, I mean, we look at the alternative.
We're
back to lesser of two evils. But my thing is this. They are using certain rhetoric to galvanize certain populations. Now, whether they have the same intentions or not, the rhetoric that Obama used to galvanize, for instance, everybody at this table, was very attractive. And I think that when you look at this country and how polarized it's been because the rhetoric has gone so far left, so far right, that the actual country itself is so... We're being pulled to two separate sides. And I'm saying those ideologies that are leading those sides are so contrary that I find it hard to understand where your how you can believe the things that you're believing from a conservative standpoint, how you're able to do all of that. So even if our leaders, those who lead these two ideologies, have ulterior motives, what they're saying you could almost find yourself
reflects real difference. Once again, me and John are in the weird situation of agreeing with each other, and without commenting on. Well, I mean, you guys more or less know where I'm coming from, but you know, I think that the differences between the parties and the political interests are stark. Now, I think that, and by the way, I think both sides are problematic. You know, I'm not a. I don't consider myself to. I mean, I definitely lean right. I don't consider myself to be far right. I know John does.
Yes,
considers me to be. But no, look, I cannot imagine that if John McCain were elected, that we would not have stayed in Iraq. We would have stayed in Iraq if John McCain.
We're still in Iraq.
Well, we're still in Iraq, but we've pulled down significantly, and
we have a base there. We have people run their government. That's a farce. We're in Afghanistan.
We don't have 100,000 troops there.
We're in Egypt.
10,000-15,000 troops now. No, the force levels are significant to note. In any event, the point was that these two sides are not different. I'm saying that John McCain probably would have kept this there full force. A guy like Paul Ryan would obviously never come up with an idea like the Affordable Care Act. The Republicans, even though Bush spent a lot of money, but conservatives generally, particularly the Tea Party brand, were never going to sort of expand what some people call the entitlement state the way Obama did. And so these differences are significant. I don't look at these and say, oh, it's basically the same thing. No, I mean, the two sides want to take the country in radically different directions. I really want there to be some sort of force in the middle, you know, that can sort of bridge a lot of these policy divides. I don't see that, and I think that to a certain extent, Wayne is justified, because I think that owes to some of the monetary interests that the two parties may be indebted to, helping to pull the parties apart. And it's not just direct buying of campaigns. It's the media. The media profits from splitting us apart and polarizing us. But just as far as the two sides being the same, being more or less the same, I gotta disagree.
What's going on, fam? This is Brother Malcolm, and you're listening to the Black Is Break. Check us out on blackisonline.com.